Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories along with Alice Bryant. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, India has banned the sale of electronic cigarettes or e-cigarettes. The ban is the latest and possibly biggest move against vaping. Vapes are electronic devices that heat liquid into a cloud of vapor that users breathe in. Most users vape with a liquid that includes the drug nicotine, several other chemicals, and flavoring. The ban cuts off a huge market for e-cigarette makers such as Juul Labs and Philip Morris International. Both companies planned to expand in India. India's health ministry said the products are novel, attractive, and come in many flavors, but said their use has increased very quickly in developed countries, especially among youth and children. India reportedly has 106 million adult smokers. That number is second only to China in the world. Indian Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman announced the ban Wednesday at a news conference. She showed different kinds of products to the media, including a Juul vaping device that looks like a USB flash drive. Juul had plans to launch its e-cigarette in India and has hired several top-level officials in recent months. Reuters had reported that Philip Morris also plans to launch its smoking device in India. The Indian ban will be imposed through an executive order. The order calls for a jail term of up to 1 year and a fine of about $1,400 for people who break the law for the first time. A repeat violation could mean a jail term of up to 3 years and a fine of up to $7,000, the government said. The ban would apply to the manufacture, importation, sale, advertisement for, or distribution of e-cigarettes. Such executive orders are usually given as an emergency measure when India's parliament is not meeting. The ban could end if it is not approved when lawmakers return to parliament. The next parliamentary term will likely be held in November.
When the sun comes up in Beijing on October 1st, the Chinese government will aim to celebrate its 70th birthday under a bright blue sky. The Chinese capital will close building sites, reduce the use of fireworks, and restrict fuel sales ahead of this year's National Day. The holiday marks the founding of the People's Republic of China in 1949. Ahead of major events in the past, officials have taken extreme measures to improve air quality, such as seeding clouds to make rain and closing factories for days. There is still time for the government to announce similar restrictions this year. But business leaders believe widespread closures are not part of the plan, as long as usual smog controls continue to do the job. An independent study last week showed Beijing is set to drop from the list of the world's top 200 most polluted cities this year. China's biggest cement producer, China National Building Materials, has not received any official closure notice yet. It does not expect any special measures. I think that if there are measures, they won't necessarily be connected with National Day. Cui Qingtai, vice president of the state-run company, told Reuters reporters, in certain seasons, some places can introduce policies to alleviate the extent of air pollution, Cui added. Officials with three small independent refineries in nearby Shandong province also told Reuters they were not expecting to have to cut production before October 1st.
Suppose you are reading an American news website. You look at an article headline, but are unsure of what the story is about. You try reading it anyway, yet some of the central ideas remain unclear. Many English language newspapers in the U.S. and other places use a writing style that is different in some ways from others. Take, for example, the use of verbs. Often, verbs in the news can look simple, like face, fuel, or drive. But some English verbs have several meanings, and news stories may use a newsy meaning, which can be tricky for the untrained reader. Today on Everyday Grammar, we will explore how a few verbs are used in the news with excerpts from VOA Learning English stories. Let's start with the verb face. In the news, the verb face is often used to say a person, group of people, or thing must deal with a difficulty or issue. A person or people might face a serious health issue, for example. A city might face a shortage of teachers. And the planet faces environmental problems. That is exactly what a recent story about student climate activists explained. In it, a leader from an environmental group used the verb face to say this about students.
There's a lot of passion there and a strong desire to deal with the problems facing the environment, she said.
The person is saying students care a lot about the planet, which is being affected by environmental issues. Another story talks about Indonesia's president announcing the move of the country's capital to the island of Borneo. Listen to a short excerpt from that story.
The goal is to move the national government outside of Jakarta, which is facing problems of overcrowding and pollution.
The speaker is saying that Jakarta, the current capital, is dealing with problems such as overcrowding and pollution. The verb fuel is another newsy verb. It often appears in stories on political issues, social movements, and national or worldwide trends. Fuel can mean to give support or strength to something, or to provide the conditions for something to happen. An August story on Hong Kong's protests explained that Facebook and Twitter had accused China of spreading disinformation. Here's a line from the story with the verb fuel.
Some ads described Hong Kong protesters as being anti-China and trying to fuel violence.
If someone or something is trying to fuel violence, it is attempting to cause or worsen it. And a September story on a UN effort to protect the world's religious sites said this about UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Guterres has often warned that hate speech is fueling intolerance around the world.
Hate speech is abusive or threatening speech or writing that shows prejudice against a group of people. Guterres warned that such speech is causing or worsening intolerance. Now let's talk about drive. The usual meaning of drive has to do with using vehicles. But in the news, drive can take on other meanings. It can mean to cause a person or thing to do something. Listen to this headline from a story about marijuana use and breathalyzer tests. Marijuana's growth in U.S. drives breathalyzer test technology. In other words, increased marijuana use in the United States has caused or led to the development of breathalyzer technology. You might also see the phrasal verb drive up in the news. The meaning is similar to drive, but drive up relates to causing an amount or price to increase. In the following example, a lawyer in Vietnam talks about how companies are moving to Vietnam from China to avoid the U.S.-China trade war. He explained that this change is helping Vietnam's economy. Have a listen.
It's really happening, so that's going to be driving up prices and driving up GDP a bit, Burke said.
And finally, we move to another phrasal verb. The verb go forward means to proceed or continue with something, such as a plan, ruling, or decision. A recent story talked about a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. It requires asylum seekers to ask for asylum in countries they pass through before reaching the United States. Here's how the story uses the verb go forward.
The Supreme Court's decision on Wednesday permits the new rule to go forward as legal action against it continues to go through the court system.
In other words, this rule will proceed. Another phrasal verb, move forward, has the same meaning and is also popular among news writers. Let's look at a recent story about the possibility of Britain leaving the European Union. Pay attention to how it uses the words move forward.
Johnson said he will move forward with Brexit even if there is no official agreement with the EU.
In other words, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will proceed with the plan to separate Britain from the European Union. Well, we hope this program has fueled your interest in understanding the news better as you go forward in learning English. I'm Alice Bryant.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. In May of 1787, a group of America's early leaders met in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to amend the Articles of Confederation. That document had established a loose union of the 13 states with a weak central government. But instead of amending the Articles, the delegates at the convention wrote a completely new constitution. As we heard last time, one of the issues they discussed was slavery. The existence of slavery affected decisions like how to count the national population. It also affected the powers proposed for Congress. The delegates at the convention accepted several political compromises on the issue of slavery. One compromise was the three-fifths rule. The population would be counted every 10 years to decide how many members each state would have in the House of Representatives in Congress. With the three-fifths rule, the delegates agreed that every five slaves would be counted as three people. Another compromise would allow states to import slaves until the year 1808. After that, no new slaves would be brought into the country. Many of the delegates in Philadelphia did not like these compromises, but they knew the compromises would keep the southern states, where slavery was most widespread, from leaving the convention. After all the debates, bitter arguments, and compromises, the delegates were nearing the end of their work. 4 months had passed since the convention began. The weather had been hot. Emotions had been hot, too, but that was expected. After all, the men in Philadelphia, and the delegates were all men, were deciding the future of their country. Early in September, the convention appointed five delegates to a committee of style. It was their job to write the document containing all the decisions made at the convention. The chairman of the committee was William Samuel Johnson of Connecticut. The other members were Alexander Hamilton of New York, Governor Morris of Pennsylvania, Rufus King of Massachusetts, and James Madison of Virginia. Of these five men, Governor Morris was known for the beauty of his language. So Johnson asked him to write the Constitution. Here in Washington, visitors to the National Archives can read an original copy of the United States Constitution. Leanne Potter at the National Archives says visitors are often surprised that the document is only 4 pages long.
The irony is that the pages are actually nearly 3 feet long and about 2 feet wide. They're written on parchment. In other words, they're written on animal skin using an iron gall ink. And this particular document was created in September of 1787.
The convention approved 23 articles for the Constitution. Governor Morris rewrote them in simpler form, so there were just 7.
The document itself is divided by article, and each article focuses on a different aspect of the American government.
Article 1 describes the powers of the Congress. It explains how to count the population for purposes of representation. and it states who can become senators or representatives and how long they can serve. Article 2 describes the powers of the president. It explains the requirements for the office and how the president is to be elected. Article 3 describes the powers of the federal judiciary, which includes the Supreme Court and all of the district and circuit courts. Leanne Potter at the National Archives explains.
That part of our government makes sure that the laws that the legislative branch creates and are being enforced by the executive branch are in fact constitutional. In other words, that the laws they create are legal themselves.
The first three articles provide a system of checks and balances. The purpose is to prevent any of the three branches of government, legislative, executive, or judicial, from becoming too powerful. Article 4 explains the rights and duties of the states under the new central government. Article 5 provides a system for amending the Constitution. Article 6 declares the Constitution to be the highest law of the land. And Article 7 simply says the Constitution will be established when 9 states approve it. The members of the convention wrote a preamble for the Constitution. It began, "We, the undersigned delegates of the states of New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and so on," it listed all 13 states by name. The Committee of Style did not think it was a good idea to list each state. After all, Rhode Island never sent a delegate to Philadelphia. And no one knew for sure if every state would approve the Constitution. So Gouverneur Morris wrote instead, "We, the people of the United States of America." Those simple words solved the problem. But they caused angry debate during the fight to approve the Constitution. They made clear that the power of the central government came not from the states, but directly from the citizens of the nation. Modern-day Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas came from a family descended from slaves. He grew up in the southern state of Georgia. Justice Thomas recalled having to memorize the opening statement to the Constitution when he was a child.
I always think it's so fascinating to think of these black kids in the segregated school in Savannah reciting the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. What do we believe? I mean, everything's so obviously in front of you is wrong. You can't go to the public library. You can't live in certain neighborhoods. You can't go to certain schools. But despite all of that, you lived in an environment of people who said it was still our birthright to be included.
The rest of the preamble states why the Constitution was written. In order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. The next step was to sign the document. On September 17th, the delegates gathered for the last time. One might think all of their business finally was done. But Nathaniel Gorham of Massachusetts rose to speak. "If it was not too late," he said, "he would like to make a change." Instead of electing one representative for every 40,000 people, as agreed, he suggested changing the number to 30,000. Gorham's proposal could have caused a bitter argument. Then, suddenly, George Washington, the president of the convention, stood up. The delegates were surprised. He had said little all summer. Now George Washington rose to express his support for the proposed change. He said it would guarantee a greater voice in the government for the people of the nation. Every delegate agreed to the change, which would mean a larger number of representatives in Congress. Finally, it was time to sign the Constitution. It was also the last chance to speak against it. Many delegates stated their objections to different parts of the document. In the end, most of the delegates declared that for the good of the nation, they would sign it. Several, however, refused to put their name on the Constitution. Edmund Randolph of Virginia and Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts said they could not sign the document. They believed it would not be approved by the states. And that, Gerry said, would lead to civil war. George Mason of Virginia also refused to sign. He had several reasons, but his first objection was that the document did not guarantee enough liberties. There is no declaration of any kind for preserving the liberty of the press, or the trial by jury in civil causes, nor against the danger of standing armies in time of peace. Mason wanted to add a declaration of rights. Randolph, Gerry, and Mason were the only delegates present in Philadelphia who did not sign the Constitution. Four other delegates who opposed it went home before the signing. So did nine delegates who supported the Constitution but went home early. Few of the delegates in Philadelphia could feel sure that enough states would approve the Constitution to make it the law of the land. As several of them said later, they wrote it the best they could. Without it, the young nation would break apart before it even had a chance to succeed. If future generations did not like the Constitution, it offered ways for them to change it. Here is George Washington, played by an actor.
I'm a practical man. I hope for the best, but I plan for the worst. And that's what this document does.
A record of the convention said that as the last delegates were signing the Constitution, Benjamin Franklin looked toward the president's chair. There was a sun painted on the back of the chair at the top. Franklin observed to a few members near him that painters had found it difficult to make a rising sun look different from a setting sun. Franklin said he had looked often at the sun on the chair during the convention without being able to tell whether it was rising or setting. But now, at length, he said, I have the happiness to know that it is a rising and not a setting sun.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.